Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a quick shout-out to the game store that I first played EDH Commander at, Untapped Games. You can find Untapped Games at untappedgames.com. Today's episode is another in the Control Room series, where I bring my friend Ryan on to talk about all things EDH, all things Commanders. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
It's going fine.
Great. So the topic of today's episode is going to be some of the undervalued Commander cards. Again, this is Standard Commander and Partner Commanders out of Commander Legends. Since the set's been out for about four-ish months or so, we figured it would be prudent to use some of the data, especially on EDH Rec, and try to find and recommend some of the commanders that we feel are undervalued and underplayed. So I know you, Ryan, you have a couple ones you want to talk about. I have a couple of different cards I want to talk about, and I think this could lead to a very interesting discussion about some cards that we may eventually want to build around ourselves. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right, how about you start us off? What's your first undervalued commander out of Commander Legends?
There's a lot of them. I mean, Commander Legends, they roughly released one quadrillion new commanders with that set. And I looked over the lists, the list of commanders they released, commander candidates, just really today. And there are commanders in here that I forgot even existed or were introduced. Like, that's how many of them are in here that you can actually just forget. Like, I totally forgot about Inara, Wolvid Familiar, and Armix Filigree Thrasher. I mean, it could be that they're so so bland and so you know, non-impactful that they're really easy just to forget about, which I do think is true from both of those commanders, but could also be that there's just so much crap here.
Yeah, we can agree to disagree on that. I think those have perfectly valid places in the right deck.
I mean, I suppose indestructibility, I'll say, on the Inara isn't a bad thing. I do think that Armix is a little bit, I don't know.
Has more of an impact on the game, probably, in the majority of more game, or at least more games than Inara. But yeah, again, every one of these cards can fit in the right situation. So what's your first pick for an undervalued commander from this set?
Well, you know, my first pick here would probably be one of my favorites from Commander Legends in general, which is Imodi, Celebrant of Bounty, which is a Simic commander. So it's three generic and then Simic colors. It's a legendary Naga druid that is a 3-1, and it has Cascade. And it also has spells you cast with converted mana cost 6 or greater have Cascade.
Okay, yeah.
So Imodi is a Cascade commander, but it's a Cascade commander that's not like, you know, the Yidris Maelstrom wielder or like the Wanderer or other cards like that that are like, you know, 4-color, 5-color kind of or maybe
kind of like Cascade good stuff.
Yeah, or the 3-color crap, I forget that 3-color combo there, or that wedge, whatever that was. It's the first one I've seen that really has Cascade and really focuses on that in Simic colors, kind of uniquely. And also, it's the first Cascade commander I've seen that isn't just primarily focused on it having Cascade, but I think the most relevant part of Imodi is not the fact that it has Cascade, but rather the second line, in that it gives spells that you cast with converted mana cost 6 or greater Cascade. So that includes creatures, includes artifacts, enchantments, anything that's 6 mana cost or greater.
I mean, even like Treasure Cruise, for instance, being an overcosted sorcery in most cases. Obviously, you're not paying 8 for that most of the time with Delve, but yeah, even something like that or Expropriate, you know, some of those dirty, at least I think they're powerful blue spells will cascade off of Imodi.
Yeah, and this is one of those commanders that I think is what you'd call, like, you know, has a narrow application, I think, and or that it's what you'd refer to as like linear, or a commander that is where the build around for the commander is strongly dictated by the card itself. So it's not it's a card that's going to be in a Cascade deck, and pretty much only going to be in a deck that builds around it with Cascade cards, and particularly also cards with converted mana cost six or greater. It's not going to be a deck you're going to build and be like, oh, and I also threw some +1/+1 counter cards in here, and then, oh, I also threw this other thing. It's like, this is Simic colors, but it's not going to be one that you're going to build Simic win conditions around. You know, it's going to be one that you're actually going to be more focused on its secondary ability here that gives things Cascade, and you're going to be focused on getting value out of that, not on other strategies. This is a build around kind of card, and so it is pretty linear in that respect. It's not a good stuffy kind of card.
Well, I mean, I beg to differ a bit on that one. I feel like, especially in this color pairing with blue and with green, you just have a whole lot of large beady creatures, you know, the green stompy things like that, which are just going to have very large creatures with converted mana cost six or more. And I feel like the fact that you can get some extra value off of those cards, you know, just playing a large creature, you know, say Creator Hoof Behemoth, even though obviously you don't, probably that's your finisher, but you get my point here, is that anytime you drop one of those 6+ green beaters, all of a sudden you get Cascade of 5 or less, honestly. So if you build your deck right, this can be absolutely insane in the right colors to be able to go insane in. Okay, so I'm going to go to my first one here. I'm going to go with Nostro, Voice of the Crags. Nostro is a 3/3 legendary chimera, costs 1 Jeskai, so that's 1 generic blue, red, white. And it reads, if you tap Nostro, you choose 1. X is the number of spells, you've cast this turn. You can choose from Scrying X, or Nostro, Voice of the Crags, deals X damage to target creature, or you gain X life. Now, when this card was spoiled, obviously it brings up ideas of Storm. I've never really played Storm. Seems kind of more complicated for my puny gamer brain to understand. But I feel like in the right kind of build here, you don't necessarily have to Storm off to get a lot of value out of this card. Again, since you're using Jeskai colors, so you have access to all the blue cantrips, Ponder, Opt, and obviously Brainstorm, things like that. And there's just a lot of low-cost cards in these colors that you can use to really build up your count. So even if you're not necessarily trying to kill someone with Grape Shot, let's say, in red, using Storm, I feel like you can still get some good value just churning through cards in your deck, and you can have some other strategy. So maybe you don't need Nostro to be your value engine. It's not necessarily a commander card that does everything your deck synergizes with. I feel like you could have it as a value engine in its own way, supporting what you're doing in the 99. And that's what I really enjoy about this card, because you can scry, obviously you get that card advantage, which is something that's huge, especially in Jeskai, or you can deal some damage to a target creature, which can be nice for getting some of those pesky creatures off the board, or you can even just gain some life. And sometimes in the right situations, that can make all the difference between victory and defeat. For instance, especially if you could activate that at the end of your turn, maybe you have a Felidar Sovereign out there or something, and you just need to be able to slap 2 extra life in there to be able to win the game on your next upkeep. So I feel like it just has all those applications that you can use it whenever you need to, and you don't have to build the deck around it necessarily. I feel like you can build the deck in such a way that it supports this, but you don't have to have Nostro out to win the game.
Yeah, and I've heard some people say or describe this as a Storm commander, but I actually don't think it works that well as a specifically built Storm commander. I think that there are actually a lot of other, or not a lot, but quite a few other commanders that are better if you wanted to build like a purpose-built, you know, Storm or combo deck out there, because a lot of those types of commanders revolve around like copying your spells or ones that let you draw when you cast spells, or things that directly feed into the Storm mechanic. Whereas this one is kind of almost its own version of Storm that's kind of stapled onto it, sort of. So it rewards you for casting more spells in a turn, but its abilities don't actually like synergize with Storm itself. So I think that actually what it would work best for is like in a spell slingy kind of deck, mm-hmm. like a non-Storm spell slingy kind of deck, like a Jeskai kind of deck. Like maybe even something that revolves around prowess or something like that.
Oh, so yeah,
like
that,
a combination of like creatures and like cantrips or like creatures and value oriented spells, because I think that it would, with Nostro, you get that additional value out of both casting creature spells and non-creature spells, and your casting of non-creature spells incidentally would buff up your creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So you could almost have like a more balanced or like mid-range kind of deck rather than something based on storming out or comboing out, you know, because Nostro is also, I don't think, a combo commander. Like there's, I don't really see a whole lot of combo in that.
No, it's not like, really. It's limited because you have to use the tap, or you have to tap Nostro. Again, it's easier to be able to untap it, but typically if you're going to be comboing out, gaining a little bit of life or scrying is probably not going to be all that useful to you when you're trying to win the game, versus whereas earlier it might be useful, but it could also, like you said, set up more of a mid-range strategy where, hey, if you can scry four or five, you know, a few turns in, all of a sudden you've made a lot of card advantage. You manufacture card advantage out of your commander, but you're not beholden to Nostro to win you the game. I just like that value engine part of it, is that you're not required to have Nostro out to be able to play the game, but it certainly adds you a nice value if you do.
And Nostro's abilities reflect, each ability reflects the color that it's associated with. So the first one is reflects blue, the second one reflects red, and the last one reflects white.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're all three of them are reflect those abilities, and in particular the first two are really kind of handy in sort of a spell slingy kind of archetype, or maybe one built around prowess, in that
mm-hmm.
you know, the first one's built on top deck manipulation and the second one is built on basically whacking a creature. The third one I don't know exactly how, I guess that could be useful in some situations, but I do think that most people would probably be using the first two. I have mm-hmm. a weird feeling about that, given that I think that the first two would be more useful to a deck that's like built around it, like a spell slingy kind of archetype
mm-hmm.
than a life gain mm-hmm. kind of
but
thing.
But I also know that sometimes if you can get two or three life extra when you're down the low life total, and you can effectively turn those spells you've already going to play in your deck into a little bit of life if you need it. So I just feel like that's kind of that safety valve option,
yeah.
kind of your revitalize, you know, draw a card, gain three life kind of thing. Whereas if you absolutely have to, you can gain a little bit of life off of this by doing what your deck's already going to do anyway. But yeah, it's probably not going to be your predominant way of using Nostro.
Yeah, and I do think it is definitely one of the more overlooked commanders. And I think part of that is because it looks stormy, but like it's, if you like really think about it, it's not really storm. It has its own kind of thing going for it. So it's maybe it's just a little bit, it's something you kind of have to think about a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And something that people don't like really grasp, like just upon looking at it, that can sometimes be a little bit more difficult in terms of popularity.
Yeah, I might try to build this eventually. You know, I got a copy in my Commander Legends sealed pool, so I might give it a shot and see what happens. All right, so what's your second pick?
So my second pick is a commander that's very much unknown and very much underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
Muldrotha the Gravetide.
sure, Ryan, sure.
Muldrotha the Great. No, I'm kidding.
you better be.
Very much the opposite of that, actually. now I'm going to go for Slurk All Ingesting.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Slurk,
yeah.
Slurk is kind of a card that I'm quite familiar with, and I think that you were going to talk about Slurk as well.
Yeah.
Slurk was a card that I pulled when we were like doing our initial foray into the draft.
Our yes,
Commander Legends.
So for the legends, sorry, excuse me, for the legends, you're also legends out there, listeners. So just know that. But Ryan and I did participate in a very limited sealed event with Commander Legends with a couple friends of ours from the game store. And Ryan did have a partner commander, I believe, and or at least a partner tandem on your sealed deck, and you were using him or it with partner. So yeah, I've seen what Slurk can do firsthand, and it's pretty bonkers in the right deck.
Yeah, and you can gain a lot of counters off of with Slurk, and he can end up getting a lot of counters on him.
Could you read what the card does?
Yeah,
first?
So Slurk is a 6-drop, so it's 1 green and 5 generic. He's a 0/0 legendary ooze. He has partner, and it says when he enters the battlefield, or he enters the battlefield with 5+1/+1 counters on him. And whenever Slurk or another creature you control dies, if it had a +1/+1 counter on it, you can put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control.
Okay.
That has a +1/+1 counter on it.
Mm.
So he's, I describe him, this is like a quasi-proliferate. It's like a quasi-proliferate for +1/+1 counter specifically and triggered by the death of any creature, essentially on your side of the board, any mm-hmm. creature you control. If it had a +1/+1 counter on it, that is, it essentially lets you put another +1/+1 counter on any other creature you're still controlling that itself has one or more +1/+1 counters on it. Which means that pretty much it's Slurk and other creatures in the battlefield that are already built around +1/+1 counters benefit from your stuff kicking the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So that means like you either sacrificing things with +1/+1 counters or are those things dying or any other situations where you're going to have things die. It gets bigger. Everything else with counters on them gets bigger, you know?
Yeah. So I feel like Slurk is interesting in mono green just because again, you're going to be putting this in a deck where you already have very strong +1/+1 synergies. Obviously, green is the color of doubling your counters, whether that's through doubling season or whether you're using the hell of a lot of numbers of doublers and that green has access to. But I also feel like Slurk, since it has partner, is also extremely interesting in tandem with like an aristocrat strategy. Obviously, I'm a Golgari mage at heart. I like looking at green and black. And I mean, I personally think that something like Sangir the Dark Baron, which was one of my partner commanders for the Sealed League, would actually kind of work in tandem with Slurk. And Sangir the Dark Baron reads 4/4 Vampire Noble with flying for 4 and 2 black. And whenever another creature dies, put 2+1/+1 counters on Sangir the Dark Baron, along with another ability on there, which only matters if another player loses the game. But really, Sangir really works with Slurk because if you're already going to have creatures dying, Sangir will get +1 counters already off of those death triggers, and then Slurk's just going to add another one. So you kind of get this weird proliferation effect between your two commanders, and they can just pump each other up. Or at least Slurk will pump Sangir up in that case. But yeah, even if you run with just mono green here, if you do have that ability to get some counters on your creatures, and you do have some creatures dying for whatever reason, whether it's Sapperling tokens or whatnot, there's just so much value stapled to that card where again, I think you got up to like a 22-22 in that one game or something in sealed. It and
was,
it was crazy.
Cause I was playing with cards that also like, I can't remember which card it was, but doubled creature power. And then I also was dealing with the fact that I was using counter generation as well to like make him bonkers big. I think I was also playing Lathiel the Bounteous Dawn. I think there
maybe.
Too, which is also a +1/+1 counter creator. Actually, let me try to. Oh, there it is. So like Lathiel, which is Selesnya, right? At mm-hmm. the beginning, it says at the beginning of each end step, if you gained life this turn, distribute up to that many +1/+1 counters among any number of other target creatures. So basically, like you can put a crap ton of +1/+1 counters on your creatures as long as you gain life, and then you can stick them on a bunch of different creatures, and then when those creatures die, they give even more +1/+1 counters to your other creatures and to Slurk. And so the next thing you know, you're like having your creatures get killed in various ways and like putting tons and tons of counters on everything. I do think, though, like, Slurk would be better out of Selesnya colors, though. Because, you know, I think, like you said, I think he would do better paired up with a black partner and then doing some kind of aristocrats or sacrifice kind of theme to him, so that he has like that those consistent death triggers. Mm-hmm. And then also like using green cards, maybe even like sort of like Simic oriented green cards to put +1/+1 counters on a lot of different things. I think that's where he would definitely shine quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And I know from a fact that card is more powerful than it looks. So if there's any listeners out there who are interested in looking at a card that may be overlooked, again, that's the whole point of this channel and of this podcast episode. But I really think Slurk is one of those cards you should look into. If nothing else, it definitely goes in the 99 of a lot of decks because of that ability.
I think his only downside is that he is a six drop, so he is a big boy, and
but you're in green. So
you know, yes, you are also in green, which means tons of ramp. So I guess, you know, a six drop isn't bad, but I do think that, you know, he is one of those cards that you wouldn't want to just like throw into any deck. You know, he kind of does demand like an actual strategy out of him. He's not like a good stuff commander by any means, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those things where you have to find the right partner pairing or the right deck, but Slurk is extremely powerful in the right settings, and I think it's definitely something listeners should look into. Okay, number two, speaking of the Commander Legends sealed pool that we did, I also ran a partner pairing, but I ran it in the Dimir colors with Sangir the Dark Baron being my promo, as well as Siani Eye of the Storm, and that is my second pick. So Siani Eye of the Storm is a Djinn monk, 3/2 for 3 and a blue, and has flying. And whenever Siani Eye of the Storm attacks, scry X, where X is the number of attacking creatures with flying. And again, I was running sort of a flying man deck for my sealed pool, and effectively that is just a whole bunch of flying creatures trying to use that as an evasive ability to be able to get damage in early and often. Now, what's interesting about Commander Legends is that Kanji Skywarden was released to buff up all flying decks, but that's in obviously that being in Azorius colors, that being white and blue, and Kanji allows you to give attacking creatures a flying +2/+0 until end of turn whenever it attacks. However, I really like Siani in my deck, especially because I was allowing Sangir to grow every time a creature died, but I really liked Siani because every time it attacked, effectively, even just by itself, I was able to get some scrying off this card. So even if it's 1, 2, 3, you're all of a sudden getting card advantage by attacking with your commander. So I feel like being able to attack with this commander in some kind of weird Voltron... it doesn't necessarily have to be a Voltron strategy for this to work. If you're building this around flying at all, you're going to typically be able to get 2 to maybe 5 scry triggers off of this every time it attacks. And I feel like that's the right kind of card advantage for a kind of an aggressive flying deck. So it's not great in most decks because, again, Siani has to attack. This is an attack trigger to scry. But if you're able to find some sort of way, like Rogue's Passage, or some way to make Siani unblockable, and you have a bunch of small flying creatures, I just feel like this is a really interesting card to be able to build around if you want to be able to have some scry just built into your commander. Kind of like Nostro that I mentioned for my last pick. I just like the fact that you have that card advantage stapled onto the card. There's also some builds out there where they... partner Siani with Elegith Crossroads Augur, which allows you to draw cards instead of scrying cards whenever you get to scry. So that's another interesting thing in Mono Blue, that you're able to take the two Mono Blue partner commanders and be able to utilize Siani's ability to be able to draw those cards. But even if you're not doing that, I feel like this is a very interesting card to have in your command zone. Again, not the most powerful, but if you're really looking for some sort of scry and you have another partner that does something different, it's definitely something to look into. As well as if you just have a flying men deck in another color, Siani works perfectly in the 99 of, let's say, my Alayla Artful Provocateur deck, which is one of the top commanders on EDH Rec, but just poops out flying fairy tokens. Well, all of a sudden, if you swing in with a few of those fairy tokens plus Siani, you're going to be scrying 4, 5, maybe 6 cards every turn, and that's pretty significant in that kind of deck.
Yeah, I think people were kind of looking down on Siani quite a bit for a number of different reasons, but I think it's also because Siani is the kind of card that would really only be worth running if it was in a deck that included a significant percentage of flying creatures or creating mm-hmm. flying tokens. So it's not like the kind of card you're just going to team up with anything and put in there. And I think also Siani is like what you said, I think it's a card that's good in the 99 of a flying kind of deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also one of the things is that, you know, it provides scrying, but it doesn't give you card advantage in that it's not actually like a draw engine.
It is card advantage in a way, because you are able to choose what cards you want to have on top of your library, which in a way could almost be better than drawing cards, depending on what is on top there.
I think a lot of people look for a card advantage of some kind stapled directly to a card when they come to like commanders in many ways. Or they're looking for at least cards that generate something, you know, on an attack trigger, right? Whereas in this case, it's more of like it top deck manipulates on an attack trigger. You know, I think maybe a lot of people aren't too big on using attack triggers in general to like to have those kinds of utility abilities, but I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that if it's used in mostly in a combat orientated deck, like mm-hmm. what you said, like
it has to be an aggro warden. yeah
it does better in that kind of deck, and I don't think it does well in other kinds of decks, and I think for that reason that's what makes it a little bit more niche, is that it's in that specific realm, right? It's also not like, in terms of a partner, it's not like the most like, you know, whomping powerful one, you know, out there. But I think that, I don't think that that could just be how people are evaluating the partner commanders. I think it would do fine if it was paired up with someone like a partner commander that was like more powerful, or if it was included in the 99.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you can like evaluate it in the same way that you'd evaluate a non-partner commander, right? You know, and wonder why there's not extra stuff stapled onto it, because it's an uncommon for one, and it's also like it's not a keynote card in general.
No, so. But that's why it's undervalued. So looking at EDH Rec, 119 Siani partner pairings include Elegith. So again, most people have tried to use Siani as a way to be able to draw cards off of Elegith, even though that does seem a little bit it seems a little funky to me, just because then you have to have both out, they have to both be attacking. But once you get that machine rolling, it can roll pretty well.
Yeah.
All right.
And there are a number of other cards like that. I guess you couldn't really call flying creatures a tribe, but you'd call that definitely flying as almost like a quasi-tribal kind of deck design. Mm-hmm. And that there's a lot of cards that play into it, I think. More than there have been like in at previous times in Magic history. There's a lot more cards that now kind of feed into that strategy.
All right. So moving on from Siani, Ryan, what is your third pick?
So I thought I was going to actually talk about a card here, which I think definitely does better in the 99 than actually as a commander in many ways, but is technically a card you can run as a commander, which is Rayav Master Smith, who is a Boros Colors Dwarf Artificer. So one red and one white. It's a 2/2 that states, whenever a creature you control that's enchanted or equipped attacks, that creature gains double strike until end of turn. Which I think is actually really good. And I think it's especially really good for a card that's a 2-drop, which is very cheap. I think that you definitely could run this as a commander for like an equipment-based deck and just, you know, rely on other cards to provide those other equipment-based bonuses. But giving anything double strike on the attack is pretty strong. That with anything that's equipped or enchanted. So that makes him, like, at home in decks based around, like, the enchantment aura, you know, theme, and also decks based around equipment theme. I think he does best, though, in the 99, actually, as a support card. I know I've stuck him into my Wyleth Soul of Steel enchantment equipment Voltron deck because, like, for a two-two for two that gives things double strike if they're enchanted or equipped is really good in terms of support for a Voltron commander, given that double strike can be a little costly to just give to things unless it's very temporary, like on an instant or something like that.
Yes, yeah, so something like a Teamer Battle Rage being a combat trick here, but only lasts for one turn.
If your double strike is being given to anything with any kind of evasion, but particularly something with trample, your opponent isn't going to be in for a real bad time, because you can imagine, like, saying you had a 7/7 with trample and something like, I don't know, maybe another evasion ability or maybe another kind of value added ability, and you're giving that card double strike, which means it's first striking the first time it hits something, which means it's probably going, even if it gets blocked, it's probably going to obliterate that thing. And if it isn't blocked or it manages to go through, it's going to hit someone for 14 damage, which is, you know, a lot. And I think that doubling anything's damage output is really good in any case.
This definitely seems like the kind of card that you're right would go in the 99 in more decks. But on the other hand, I can see that this also being an interesting commander if you're building around the enchantment or equipment theme, where you could be giving even... Yeah, there's a whole bunch of really low-cost artifacts out there that you could start trying to buff up kind of a go-wide strategy here if you wanted to. Maybe get four or five creatures out there, give something like Bonesaw or... just any of those really low-cost artifacts and equipments or enchantments, and then you can just go to town with that sort of thing, too. So it's I don't feel it's as good as a commander, but I think that there are ways you could certainly build this where you could have a fairly powerful deck just by playing extremely cheap, low-cost artifacts.
I think, yeah, I actually, that comes to mind for me as well, like a go-wide theme, which is kind of, it's kind of unusual if you think about it, if he was the commander for an equipment or enchantment based strategy. Like when you think of equipment or enchantment based strategies, you don't generally think like mass effects or like go wide. But given that he gives all just whenever any creature attacks, like if you had Togo, Goblin Weaponsmith or whatever out there, and he was making a bunch of rocks, and you say you gave a bunch of different creatures rocks, or, you know, abused Togo's landfall triggers to create a crap ton of rocks, you could find yourself with a lot of creatures with double strike.
Yeah.
You know, maybe slap down an anthem of some kind. Like, that is a very unconventional equipment or a strategy, but one that could be pretty deadly.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of deck I'd actually build, because again, I just love Boros Colors, and I just love going wide with a bunch of random creatures in a really weird build. But yeah, it just seems better in a way than, or a jankier way of just trying to play Rage Reflection, which costs 6 in red, but this also sort of gives you that interesting support out of a commander that may just cost 2 if you play it at the right time, so... Yeah, I feel like that's a very interesting kind of deck that you can build. But yeah, it works great in your Wyleth deck and any kind of go tall strategy for one or two creatures.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of potential to squeeze the maximum amount of benefit out of a card like this when it's pretty open-ended in who it can give like a powerful ability to. And there's a lot of ways that you could especially in Boros colors, that you could create tokens, like, you know, with a symbol of Legion or something like that. Mm-hmm. And let's say you were also, you know, with Tago, generating a bunch of equipment tokens. So you can equip your tokens to your tokens. And, like I know that that's probably not as effective as just, like, you know, playing some kind of overrun effect and just completely swamping the opponents. But that is pretty hilarious if you just gave a bunch of, like, 1-1 dudes rocks and, you know, dropped an anthem and made them all swing for a win against someone. Mm-hmm. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Kind of, that is like that would be a jank build of great proportions.
I may have to build that at some point and play it against you. That actually sounds like something that might be right up my alley.
You're playing Boros versus Boros, like Boros go wide versus Boros go tall, Voltron.
Yeah, hey,
who wins?
I honestly don't care. That sounds great, actually.
Yeah.
So, let's see, my third choice for the underappreciated for the underappreciated commanders in the Commander Legends set is Jury, Master of the Review. And I know we talked about this a little bit earlier, Ryan, but again, I've actually seen this deck in action, and it is quite powerful. So, Jury, Master of the Review is a 1-1 human shaman for black-red, and whenever you sacrifice a permanent, put a +1/+1 counter on Jury, Master of the Review. And when Jury dies, it deals damage equal to its power to any target. So when this card got spoiled, obviously people were looking at it and thinking, hey, it does exactly what Korvold, Fae Cursed King does, and Korvold is vastly superior. However, since I'm a jank brewer at heart, I always look past those things, and I try to see what is the metal of the card in the right deck. And Jury works a lot, obviously, like a lot like Korvold, is that it gets +1/+1 counters when you sacrifice a permanent, but I really like that when Jury dies, it deals damage equal to its power to any target. I feel like this is a very interesting way to potentially put, like, Fling on a commander, so if you're able to get some interesting sacrifice synergies, whether it's an Aristocrats deck or whether you're sacrificing cards to some weird effect like Pox or Fraying Omnipotence, where you have to sacrifice a whole bunch of cards on not only in your hand but on the battlefield, all of a sudden Jury can get extremely large, and then you can just fling it. I mean, think about this, is if you use Fling on Jury, you are not only doing damage to someone's face, probably, by using Fling, but you're also effectively doubling that damage. And then all of a sudden, if you start going down the jank road, well, what happens if you're throwing Torbrand? Again, I know that's your favorite there, Ryan. What happens if you start, like, doubling damage here? You could potentially be doing, like, 4x damage with Jury. So I feel like this is kind of one of those things where you could build Voltron, or you could just kind of build a weird, like, Rakdos Fling deck based around Jury, just kind of sacrificing, dodging things, and then just chucking him at someone's face.
Yeah, I think Jury is one of, I believe, two original Rakdos legends that were released in this set, unless there was another one. So
Right about that one. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Blim Comedic Genius being the other.
The other ones, there's a couple of the reprints in there, too. I don't know if either of those two commanders, like, I don't know if they exactly represented what I'd kind of want in a Rakdos kind of colors, right? I think Blim is kind of cool, but I think that the discard kind of effect, I don't think is as good in Commander as something, let's say, that would, say, give you benefits. I think that, like, doing discard tends to be something that people really hate. So I think that is kind of thing that hampers Blim. And I think for Jury, I think that Jury would be, has everything right to make a really good Rakdos kind of commander, but I feel like there's just not quite enough to it. And I think part of it is that it, I'm thinking, It requires other card pieces for it to really to hit people for a lot of damage. Something like Torbran or other kind of cards that are damage doublers. But I think that what Rakdos does best when it comes to something like this, where it's a targeted form of damage rather than one like because if it just said, hey, this does this much damage to all your opponents, right, it'd kind of remind me more of like a Punisher kind of card. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of reminding me more of something that's almost more of a utility ability, right, or something that either deals damage to a planeswalker opponent or a creature. It's almost I almost wish it either went more in the direction of a Punisher kind of strategy, or it had a little bit of a higher like output, because you know it revolves around +1/+1 counters whenever you sacrifice something, right? So it's mm-hmm. specifically only when you sacrifice a permanent rather than when anyone sacrifices a permanent, which I think is too bad because Rakdos does really well at forcing people to sacrifice stuff. But like if you force other people to sacrifice stuff, you're not, Jury actually doesn't get any value from that specifically. Mm-hmm. I think it could, if they had just put like, whenever a player sacrifices a permanent, put a +1/+1 counter on him. Or if they made it so that he didn't have to die for him mm-hmm. to deal damage equal to his power, I think either one of those two would be better. Because I think he's built not as like a Punisher or someone who does a small amount of damage, but rather someone who's trying to do a bunch of damage all at once, like, and have be flexible. So kind of making him die is kind of like, I don't know. It seems like something that you'd have to make some tougher to build around, I think.
Mm-hmm. But again, that's what I really enjoy about this game, is the fact you have that ability to build around it. And I mean, it is a challenge, but again, I mean, sometimes we hear people saying that they don't necessarily like the generic just play cards, win game kind of thing. Is if you're interested in looking at a puzzle, I feel like Jury is another one of those cards where if you can figure out how to unlock the potential, it has the potential to be extremely nasty. I'm going to give a shout out to Pixie Kitten here. Her deck with Jury on it a few weeks ago on the Magic with Zuby stream was actually quite deadly. So I'm going to say, just from personal experience, having seen that game, that if built right, this deck can be absolutely disgusting, and I really love it. So
I like Rakdos a lot, and Rakdos has two of my most favorite kind of colors in it, both like the aspects of red and the aspects of black. But I think the problem with the existing Rakdos legends and like Rakdos strategies is they tend to revolve around sacrificing things and doing damage to a bunch of things, like Punisher strategies or like incremental damage or discard strategies, and either one of those things tend to make people really mad and tend to like make people want to like eliminate you from the table. And that's what I've noticed with my Torbran deck, like, which is again, it's not a Rakdos Punisher, but it is a mono red Punisher, is that it tends to make people mad when you're like whacking them and punishing like everyone at the table. And I think that's one of the things about Rakdos, is like it doesn't have a ton of commanders that do alternative things, and I think that Jury is kind of like the opportunity to have a commander that doesn't just whack other people like everyone at the table all the time, but is a little more targeted, you know. And I think it could have been, you know, had more things added to it to make it better at that specifically, but you know, I guess that's just my kind of griping.
Yeah, I mean, we can agree to disagree on this one. Yeah. Anyway, moving on, do you have a fourth underrated commander?
Yeah, I do. I think... Oh, crap.
Because you did mention Belborca, and I wanted to bring that up.
Thank you for bringing that up. I totally forgot about him. Okay, yeah. So Belborca, Spectral Sergeant, he's also a Boros commander. I guess there's kind of a theme here.
Seems to be a theme.
Boros had some really good commanders in this, which is... I'm just going to put this aside a little bit tangentially, but normally, like, when I've seen a lot of times when Boros commanders have been introduced, they have been not so great, or they've been just leaning entirely into, like, combat strategies, other than, like, Feather the Redeemed, which is just kind of absolutely disgustingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of Boros commanders don't fix some of the issues with Boros colors, and that, you know, like... card accumulation or ramp or like other things that are kind of like shortfalls. What they tend to do is just focus on beating people to death harder with your commander, right? And that's what a lot of them do. But like in this set, I feel like there was a couple of Boros cards being introduced here that actually do other things. Now, so Wyleth is kind of like a beatdown card, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a beatdown card that also addresses card advantage and has draw stapled to him. And it's actually a really good card that can draw you a lot.
Yeah.
So it actually shores up within the 99 or as a commander some of the weaknesses of Boros if you're running a Boros equipment enchant or a strategy, mm-hmm. right? And then this other card here also addresses some of the basic things that I just talked about.
So do you want to read Bel'Borka out real quick?
So Bel'Borka is Boros and then two generic. It's a star 5 toughness, so it's a variable power. Mm-hmm. It says, note the converted mana cost of each card as it's put into exile. Bel'Borka, Spectral Sergeant's power is equal to the greatest number noted for it this turn. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn.
So kind of some impulsive draw there.
Yeah, it's impulsive draw, and it's also, there's not a lot of Boros-colored impulsive draw. There's a lot of red impulsive draw, which Boros naturally would want to use because white also has some difficulties with card accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's a little different than it's impulsive draw, but he's also grows from impulsive draw. So it almost rewards like a self-exile strategy. Or even possibly like some kind of ability that would like exile your own creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And each card as it's put into exile, that includes other people's cards. That includes a whole lot of stuff. So this card is kind of hard to wrap your head around exactly what it does. But basically, the best play situation for him would be one where, you're both getting that impulsive draw and you're setting his power right with that first impulsive draw of your turn. Mm-hmm. But he also could benefit a lot as a combat commander if you specifically looked to exile things that were high converted mana cost during a turn, particularly at instant speed.
Yeah. So what I really like about this card, sorry to butt in here.
Yeah.
Is you can play with things like Outpost Siege with Chandra, for instance, which allow you to do more of those impulsive draws, because, again, you're dealing with Boros's difficulty and card advantage when you do that, plus you have it stapled on to Bel'Borka. But you also have the ability to play things like Eerie Interlude or Cloud Shift, just being two examples, and kind of playing some weird Boros Flicker deck in a deck where it doesn't necessarily seem to feel like it fits. And if you can have the right cards out there or force your opponent's cards to flicker in some cases, all of a sudden you can build up Bel'Borka just by using some interesting white combat tricks. So you're getting the red impulsive draw, but you're also able to kind of mess with your creatures and with your opponent's creatures, and maybe through doing that you can get some ETB effects or something as well. So I feel like if you're going to be doing that to improve Bel'Borka's power, you can also kind of get some good ETB tribal in a way stapled to the card and get some extra value out of it.
And I think like part of what makes this guy so interesting is that this guy's abilities here are like their static kind of abilities and they're assumed like instant speed. They're not activated abilities. They're also not like a tap abilities. These are things that can happen like right out of the gate as soon as a specific thing happens, in this case something moving into the exile zone, right? Mm-hmm. And that can be something blinking out of existence, that can be you path to exiling someone's creature,
mm-hmm.
that could be you having a permanent blink, that can be nearly anything. All of a sudden his power just changes, like if it's something higher than what the highest converted mana cost was that turn. So you could declare him as an attacker and then all of a sudden just like path someone's creature across from you. And then all of a sudden he's like at 10-5, like out of nowhere, like because you nuked someone's creature. It's an Exile Matters commander, which I've never seen before or heard mm-hmm. about. Exile Matters. That's like design space that I don't think has ever really been explored. There have been a lot of cards that interact with the graveyard in that kind of way, you know, when things leave or exit the graveyard. But I've never really seen cards that interact with things as they enter the exile zone or, like, change based on that. And it's in one of the two colors that's best at exiling things, or it's actually in the best color when it comes to blinking or exiling, which is white. So, like, it's a card that really is based around the strengths of white when it comes to having things be removed from play, and also one of the best ways to get around the lack of card draw in red, which is impulsive draw. So it's just really novel and interesting. And this guy isn't really popular, which is, I think it's really odd, because he's not, like, overwhelmingly focused on combat, even though, like, that is what this encourages. He's not necessarily a commander that would only encourage you using him as a Voltron to smack people in the face. Like, the fact that he has this impulsive draw ability at the beginning of every upkeep means that he'd actually do well for a lot of different types of Boros decks that, say, might lean more into spells or even going wide as creatures or, like, other things like that, because it shores up one of those core weaknesses, you know?
Yeah, and that's interesting for me too, is that we haven't seen something like this before in a color combination that's not necessarily known for doing that in most of its decks, and it brings in the very interesting design spaces you mentioned for the color pairing, as well as just for having a very interesting way of dealing with exiling cards.
And I wonder how Bel Borco would interact with those new Fortell mechanic, because I believe Fortell also involves putting things into exile.
It does. I'm just not sure if you get the mana cost. It's almost like Morph at that point, is that you have a zero mana cost. So I don't think that would work very well, but I might be wrong.
I wonder, because it says the converted mana cost of each card as it's put into exile. And so I'm kind of wondering, like, whether that is something that would be triggered as soon as you remove something from your hand, or whether it would, as soon as you remove it from your hand, it ceases to have any kind of converted mana cost. That might be something I have to think about. But if it was something that you could trigger with Fortell, then I think that would make him even more bonkers, because then you could just be, like, really fine tuning his power there with certain things.
And I'm going to wrap up with my fourth pick here. I'm going to go with Hans Eriksen, just because. I mean,
he's got to run.
Yeah, I actually did play this on Magic with Zuby's stream a while back as part of a sealed event. And Hans Eriksen is a very interesting 1/4 human scout for 2 in Gruul, so 2 generic red-green. And whenever Hans Eriksen attacks, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, put it onto the battlefield tapped and attacking defending player or a planeswalker they control. Otherwise, put that card into your hand. When you put a creature card on the battlefield this way, it fights Hans Eriksen. Yeah. So besides the really cheesy art and all the lore that goes behind this character, it's a very interesting deck to build. Because you're able to
very
effectively...
Very strange deck to build around, too.
Yeah, because you don't typically put the fight mechanic in your own deck. Where, I mean, like, something like Gargos Vicious Watcher or, Fight Club kind of thing. You're not really... With Naoth of the Dire Hunt, excuse me. And you're not going to really be doing that as much with Hans Eriksen, because you're effectively just trying to get out a whole bunch of very large creatures on an attack trigger. So again, the attack trigger does bring it down somewhat in the fact it's a 1/4. So I mean, it's not exactly indestructible by any means, but there's also ways to make Hans indestructible using various cards, Dark Steel Plate, something like that. And all of a sudden, every time he attacks, you're going to potentially be able to just oops all giant creatures, get your dragons or your Craterhoof Behemoth or, you know, something like that dropped on the attack trigger. And then you put something like Strionic Resonator in there, which allows you to double that. All of a sudden, you're getting 2 cards off of that. You can be dropping 2 giant beaters out there. And yes, even if Hans dies, you're still getting very good value. Now, in that sealed game, though, I did not get very good luck on this. I got a Fertilid. The one time I was able to pull this off, so I was able to ramp a bit, I guess. So, I mean, it didn't, I think Hans actually killed, maybe it wasn't fertile, but it seems like Hans actually killed the creature I brought out on the trigger. So, well, it didn't necessarily work and sealed in the terrible pool I had. I feel like this is one of those cards that could be interesting to build around. I know a lot of other creators have built decks, much better decks than I ever could with this guy, but there's some interesting potential right there. Plus, just the hilarity of the story and just the art is too funny not to mention.
So yeah, Hans is basically like cheaty facing a creature onto the battlefield, which means that you're going to, if you built a Hans Ericsson deck, I think primarily what you'd want to do is either load it with creatures that were massive and beefy and very, very expensive, or like have load it with creatures that have like low power but have a high toughness,
something like 2 to 3, or even something fertile that works.
Kill, like either make it so that you can give Hans Ericsson indestructible or make it have protection from things or make him have a high toughness, or only have your deck full of things with the 3 power toughness so that when they get slammed onto the field they don't kill Hans immediately and instead they go hurtling right toward an opponent, and then the opponent's like, oh shit, I can't do anything about this creature attacking me, and that creature has really high toughness, so I can't kill this thing. So they have to just end up, you know, I guess it would be even better if it had trample or something like that attached to something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of limited to building it with either making it so Hans Ericsson can't die, making it so that if he does die, he comes back, which is kind of hard to do in Gruul, because Gruul isn't exactly known for its recursion or reanimation effects, right? Or have it so that he is only being hit by things that can't kill him immediately. So nothing with death touch, obviously, you know. But I think, so there's a couple of different ways around it, but if you can build around him, he has the potential of cheating something out every turn, basically, if you can attack mm-hmm. with him. And so I guess you need to select who he's going to fight anyways. I think a lot of people were talking about how he's not really good because it's like, oh, well, what he'll do is he'll attack and he'll just get domed immediately by the first creature that comes out because he sucks. And I'm like, well, wouldn't be that hard to give him indestructible or just boost his toughness, you know, like attach an equipment or aura or like any kind of, you know, thing to him to make him so he won't die from whatever he summons forth to attempt to murder him, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think it'd be that hard, and I do think that you shouldn't underestimate the power of being a cheaty face and dumping things onto the field that you shouldn't be able to dump onto the field, especially like he's a 4-drop, so that means if you gave him haste on the first turn he came into play and attacked with them, it means you could potentially cheat something out. Again, that's in Gruul colors, so there's some big honking creatures in Gruul, like, you know, Boborygmos and like other giant honking creatures.
Yeah, you know, Craterhoof,
Craterhoof Behemoth,
giant red dragons, or
those are kind of like magical Christmas land scenarios, right?
Sheevan Dragon.
Even if Hans Ericsson died. If you dumped something that big onto the field and Hans Ericsson got eaten by it, I don't know if you'd mind too much because that thing is also swinging immediately at an opponent that Hans was swinging at after that creature mm-hmm. eats Hans. Mm-hmm. So effectively, it's been hasted and it's coming right at someone and they didn't even have a chance to do anything about it unless they immediately path to exile that thing or have an answer for that thing. It could end up tramping right over them and smacking them.
Yeah, so that's what's really nice about Hans. Yeah, especially if you're able to find ways like Scroll Rack or something to do some top deck manipulation, all of a sudden this card really gets good.
If you can do some manipulation, let's say you're one of those people and you played the top.
Okay, yeah.
I know people aren't exactly like big on people who do that because it's like people tend to just fiddle around with the top of their library all the time. But Hans is the kind of card that would reward that. Unless you, because it would allow you to build with a wider kind of deck variety and not have to worry maybe about killing him every time, because you could manipulate what he'd try to find on the top of the library. He's also giving you free draw if it's like a land or something. He's letting you put an extra card into your hand, which I don't think should also be looked down upon as much, especially given that, like, in Gruul, obviously green has kind of gone way up and now can do everything that all the other colors can do, including card draw directly. But I mean, I still think it's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I chose this card, is I just feel like there's that kind of potential where, yeah, even if Hans does die, if you're able to pull something huge off the deck, well, you got it out there, and you didn't have to telegraph your play, you didn't have to use mana, so Hans can effectively be a sacrificial lamb here, and you can get something huge out. So,
he could probably work in the 99, but I think that he would do better around a deck, like, as a commander actually built around him in many ways, because, like, you'd want to carefully control this if you actually wanted to make it something other than just a deck where Hans dies 50% of the time, right out the gate. Because that could be really expensive in terms of commander tax really quickly. He's already a 4-drop. He's not a 1-drop here. So you're not going to be able to just have him die 4 times and be able to keep casting him.
But you are in green, so you can make up for it in some cases, but too.
I think he's optimally played. If you can say optimal about a card that's kind of a meme, kind of like almost more of a hilarious card than like a I'm going to play this competitively and smash you kind of card. I think you can there's an optimal way to play him, and that's either making it so he can't die by making him unable to die, or making it so that the creatures can't kill him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of ways to be able to build this deck, but I think it's one of those decks that's very interesting to build, and maybe I'll do that someday. So I think that'll bring us to the end of today's episode. Hopefully we gave you, as the listeners, some interesting underrated cards from Commander Legends that we think you should look into in the future. So if you want to catch more of the Control Room podcast series with Ryan and I, you can go on Spotify, Apple Casts, or Google Podcasts, or I think that's right. I can never keep track of those. And you can find the back catalog of all the Control Room, as well as all of the standard MTG in Quarantine podcasts. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. And again, we do have a Discord. If you're interested in joining that and playing with Ryan and I sometime, you can DM me for an invitation. So I want to thank you again, Ryan, for being on the episode. It's been great as always.
Yeah, it's been great. Great having me on. Really nice to talk about all my favorite weird commanders.
Yeah, it makes two of us. All right, so for MJ and Ryan, you've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast channel. Have a great rest of your day.